The Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division will come to order. Today we're going to talk about and hear about child care and what's happened with child care in the last few years and where we're going from here about child care. First person is the Executive Director of Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network. Ann McCauley, welcome to the committee.
Thank
you. People will be coming in, and by the time you're through, this place will be filled.
Glad to help, Madam Chair. My name is Ann McCauley. I'm with Child Care Resource and Referral, but I'm also here today as a board member of Child Care Works. And just so you know, Child Care Works is a statewide coalition of child care advocates and individuals working to develop public policy initiatives that increase the affordability, accessibility, and quality of child care. In my work at Child Care Research and Referral, we are a nonprofit organization that supports a system of 18 agencies throughout the state. And those agencies help parents find child care in their local area, provide training and grant support for child care providers, and they work in partnership with many organizations that share these goals. My task today as the lead-off witness is to paint the big picture of child care for you. I've circulated a copy from members of our annual report, and I would refer you to that. A lot of the statistics I'll be citing are contained in there, and hopefully if I go too quickly, you'll be able to find those after I'm done. Let me start by saying that the research is exceedingly clear on the architecture of young children's brains. We know that children are learning all the time in whatever setting they're in. And we know that for at-risk children, these settings are critical, particularly during their early years. In Minnesota, most of the young children are in child care settings, whether that's a child care center, a licensed family child care home, or with a family member, a friend, or a neighbor. About three-quarters of Minnesota families with children under age 13 regularly use some type of child care arrangement. And over 360,000 children spend some portion of their day in a licensed child care setting. In 2003, our network issued a report with the National Economic Development and Law Center. This report looked at the economic impact of the child care industry in Minnesota, and it looked at that impact in three important ways. First, that child care impacts the economy in the here and now by supporting the workforce. It impacts the long-term economy by providing quality programs that prepare children for school and reduces costs for a whole range of social issues in the future, a theme you've heard championed by Art Rolnick of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, Ready for K, Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, among others. And a point that's often lost in the discussion, child care is itself a major contributor to this economy, providing work for over 36,000 employees and bringing in $962 million as of 2003. And at that time, that was about 77% of the size of the corn industry, just for perspective. When we look at those three points then, first of all, child care and the immediate needs of the workforce. Over one-third of Minnesota's workers have children under the age of 18. As you likely know, Minnesota boasts the highest work participation for women in the nation, at 75% of mothers with young children in the workforce. If we look only at the early years prior to kindergarten, we see that over 250,000 Minnesotans, that's over a quarter of a million people, live in households where all parents work, meaning both parents of a dual-parent family and all single-parent families. And 68% of Minnesota children live under the age of six, live in those households and are in need of some form of care. In 2004, the Wilder Research Center conducted a child care use study of Minnesota families to get more specific data and reported the following results. 20% of parents said that child care problems had interfered with getting or keeping a job in the previous year. Child care problems that interfere with employment more commonly affected parents of color, parents who have a child with special needs, parents with low incomes, and parents who have a child care subsidy than other parents by about 2 to 1. 37% of households said that they or a spouse or partner had lost time or income in the past 6 months due to a child care problem other than a sick child. And the number of parents who reported that they had to take whatever care they could get increased from 8% in 2001 to 29% in 2004. This brings us to the issue of access to care. As of this past December, we had 11,800 family child care providers and 2,000 center-based programs. And when we call things center-based programs, we're talking about child care centers, preschools, and school-age care programs. In addition, an estimated 150,000 households provide care for family, friends, or neighbors, with grandparents the most common providers. Unfortunately, we have seen a net loss of nearly 1,500 licensed child care programs in Minnesota between 2003 and 2007. And that is
Will you say that again, please?
We've lost nearly 1,500 licensed child care programs in the state of Minnesota between 2003 and 2007. That's a net loss. So, for instance, the last 2 years alone, 3,000 child care programs have closed. Others have opened, but the net loss has been over 1,500 in the last 4 years, or 5 years. Each closing has multiple impacts. It means the loss of a business, the loss of the training and experience of that provider, and on average, providers have been in the business 10 to 15 years. The loss of stability for a family, and perhaps the most important measure, the severing of the close relationships that have been built with the children. It's in all of our best interests to help good providers stay in business. Another large barrier to access is the cost of care. Most families who use child care have out-of-pocket expenses. Households with low income shoulder the biggest cost burden relative to their income. For upper-income families, child care usually takes about 7% of their income, while for low-income families, child care can cost up to 30% of their gross income. At the same time, families with young children are usually at a low point of income earnings, given that they're likely in early stages of their work and career. Expenses can range widely depending on the age of the child, the type of care, and the geographic area of the state. And some of this is outlined in the annual report that is in your packet. On page 5, you'll see a breakdown by week and by region and by age of child that helps you see that range. But I'll just give you one example. For a family with a preschool child and an infant, full-time care can average between $15,000 and $24,000 a year in the metro area, and $12,000 to $16,000 in greater Minnesota, depending on the setting. More than double the cost of the annual tuition at the University of Minnesota. It's hard not to see that the cost of child care is a huge concern for parents of all income levels, but especially for low-income families. As you'll hear from providers, however, child care programs already operate on the thinnest of margins, and in some areas, they operate at a loss. Due to the freeze on provider reimbursement rates for child care assistance in 2003, and despite the fact that a small increase has been made since, we are not even close to covering the actual market rates of child care providers, and many providers are still hurting. We built our child care assistance program in Minnesota based on offering child care choices for parents. In fact, the federal government requires that we give families equal access to different types of care. In 2005, we were at the 55th percentile for access to centers, and we were sent a warning letter from the federal government that said we should get back to market rates, and we were not providing equal access. The most current data show that we've fallen even further. Only 40% of centers and 55% of family child care providers are technically within reach to child care assistance families, unless they, or the program, or a third party, can pay the difference in the rates. In 2001, by comparison, more than 80% of all providers fell within the reach of those rates. I want to make a few additional points about just how much the child care assistance picture has changed in Minnesota. Prior to 2003, Minnesota was ranked 5th in the nation in income eligibility for our basic sliding fee program. It is now ranked 42nd out of 50 states. A family of four making over 175% of poverty, or $35,000, would not be eligible to enroll and would be left with their entire bill. And if you think back to the costs I just cited, that would be an awfully large chunk of their income. We are one of only 17 states that either doesn't budget enough for child care or doesn't forecast for it. And over 16,000 families and 28,000 children are currently served through both the MFIP and basic sliding fee programs of child care assistance, but nearly 3,000 families are currently on the waiting list. Although child care assistance reflects only a portion of the overall market, it has a tremendous ripple effect on the field and on individual programs and on families. I would call your attention to the trend line that's also in this program, of this report on page 4. It indicates the barriers experienced by families that have used our referral services. Now, this is based on a sample of all families who call us, so over 30% of those are not low-income families. And yet there's a direct impact on barriers such as the type of care available, the quality of care, and the cost of care. The trend line has gone up steadily, or went up steadily, after the 2003 cuts, to the point where nearly 50% of parents in 2005 indicated they had problems finding the type of care they needed. While we are still nowhere near where we were in 2001 on these measures, you will see that we've started to see a slight trend downward. And we want to see that and need to see that continue. When a central or family child care program has to scrimp on quality, all of the children are negatively affected. If a program closes, all of the children and families are out of luck. And if we reduce access to care for child care assistance families, particularly to quality care programs, we don't see the long-term savings to society, and we all lose. We have sometimes struggled to make clear to decision makers that child care is really education. And whether a child is in a preschool room at a child care center, or a four-year-old program at a school, in a standalone preschool or a Head Start program, or spending their day with a family child care provider, critical early learning can and does happen. Quality improvements is one area where there were some investments made by the legislature last year. And our system, the Child Care Resource and Referral System, as well as others, have continued to provide direct support, such as grants for program improvements, professional development opportunities, scholarships to help providers attain higher education degrees, and now the Parent Aware Quality Rating Pilot, which puts a strong emphasis on helping providers through improvement supports. What we found is that there is a hunger for professional development and quality improvement among many of our state's providers. Often it's a lack of resources or access that gets in the way. As we continue to acknowledge the important role of child care providers in preparing young children for school and life, and as parents expect more of them along the lines of school readiness, it's incumbent on us to continue to support them with the necessary resources to fulfill this role. And I just want to close with a quote from a provider that's in the same report that I think sums it up very well. "I work with my families to give these children the best possible start in life. Much of preparing the kids for kindergarten and the day they leave my care is about playtime that is designed to help them learn, listening when they talk, and reinforcing every day in 100 ways that they are special, wonderful kids." Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. McCauley. Can I clarify a couple things?
Yes, ma'am.
Please. Okay, in the last 5 years, we've lost 1,500 licensed child care facilities.
Madam Chair, that is a net loss of 1,500. I wasn't able to go back beyond the last 2 years, but there have been over 3,000 programs that have closed in the last 2 years. So in other words, we've had some programs open.
Right.
But the net loss. Correct.
There's 3,000 families on the waiting list?
Approximately, it changes day to day. Madam Chair.
And prior to 2003, Minnesota was fifth in the United States.
Madam Chair, as a measure of the level of eligibility where we allowed families to come onto the child care assistance program, we were ranked fifth, meaning among the best. And now, Madam Chair, we're ranked among the worst.
And can you address why that is?
Madam Chair, that was a change to the eligibility requirements for families. So now we have families, as I mentioned, who cannot get onto the program unless their incomes are below 175% of the poverty level. They can stay on the program once they're on it up to 250% of the poverty level, but they can't get on there unless they're below, and the statistic I mentioned was $35,000 for a family of four.
Okay. What was that number, fifth before and what now, 20?
Madam Chair, give me one moment. I want to get this right. Too many pieces of paper. Madam Chair, we ranked fifth in the nation prior to 2003. We now rank 42nd.
42nd. And that means because of the change of eligibility, not because all the other states are doing more and we're doing less.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure what all the statistics are going into that. We just know that we're ranked 42nd, primarily because of where we set eligibility. Yes.
Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. And with this little pamphlet that you gave us, we just open all kinds of conundrums for us.
And I'm sure that wasn't my intent, but I'm happy to provide information.
Our second guest this afternoon is Pamela Willard, director of the Golden Heart Child Care Center, Taylor Corporation, Mankato.
Yes.
And I bet that's Glenn Taylor, huh?
Yes, right.
I used to work with him when he was here. We remember him.
Remember
him fondly.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the Finance Committee. I am Pamela Willard, Director of Golden Heart Child Care Center for Taylor Corporation employees in North Mankato, Minnesota. In 1980, in the middle of a cornfield, Taylor Corporation built a child care center to meet the child care needs of their employees. An employee had approached the board with the suggestion of looking at the child care possibilities. At that time, Taylor Corp was losing good employees because there was not adequate child care to meet the employees' needs. After looking at various options, they decided to build an on-site center so that they could assure hours that would meet the company needs, but more importantly, assure that their employees would have quality care for children 6 weeks through kindergarten. They wanted a way to be sure there was an adequate workforce to meet the needs of their customers. This decision was made with the knowledge that long-term financial commitment would be needed. The Mankato Free Press headline said, "Company chooses playpens over presses." And that was in reference to they had X number of dollars. They were going to invest in increasing their productivity. They could buy more presses, but if they could utilize the presses they have more completely because of the use of adequate child care, that made more sense all the way around.
Excuse me, Ms. Willard, what do you mean by presses?
Taylor Corporation is a printing company. So they print business cards, wedding invitations, graduation invitations, so it's printing presses.
Thank you for that clarification.
Mm-hmm. The corporation subsidizes 40 to 50% of the center's operating costs to ensure that their employee families have quality care. That 40 to 50% is from day one until today. The employees of the child care center are employees of the corporation. All of the employees who work 20 hours or more qualify for the corporation benefit package. This includes shared cost health, dental, vision, life insurance, long-term and short-term disability, as well as paid time off. In the field of child care workers in the Mankato area, benefits are rare. In looking at various child care centers, I find in the area, very few of them had any health insurance possibilities for their employees at all, and a limited amount of paid time off. So what Taylor Corporation is offering is providing child care professionals a way to stay in the field, but also meet their financial and health care needs. The benefit to the corporation is their employees are able to work without worrying about their children. Having the center also relieves the parents of having to find backup care if their provider was sick or otherwise unable to care for their children. The added benefits that they did not anticipate were that more women were willing to take on supervisory positions as the center provided care that met their work schedule. Approximately 60 to 65% of the Taylor Corporation employees are women. Even employees who have no need for Golden Heart are very proud of the program that is provided and often bring their customers as well as their families over to tour the center. The loyalty and pride in what their company is providing is very important to having a strong, stable workforce. Having high-quality, developmentally appropriate programming is a priority. Taylor Corporation knows that the first 5 years are essential to the foundation of a child's future educational growth and potential. At the center, we hire as highly qualified staff as possible, and we currently have 26 direct care staff, and 13 of them have 4-year early childhood degrees, and 4 have 2-year associate degrees in early childhood education,
and Tour are in. Quality and consistency are the key to providing the best environment for children to learn and grow. Six of our staff have been at Golden Heart for 20 to 27 years. Eight of our staff have been there 10 to 20 years, and 12 have been there 2 to 7 years. This is rare in the child care field, and we are very fortunate. The Department of Human Services in their cost of care report stated that full-time child care costs can exceed $12,000. The majority of that cost is for staffing, but that still doesn't provide child care providers with adequate pay and benefits. The wait list for child care assistance is very long, as we just heard, and many families wait years before they get to the top of that list. A family of three with $30,000 income does not qualify for assistance and can pay more for child care than they pay for their housing costs. At Golden Heart, we have several child care assistance families and families that are on the wait list. For families that are not getting any outside assistance, the corporation provides, in addition to the 50% subsidy, some additional subsidies to help the lower income families. Corporate-sponsored on- or near-site childcare is definitely the high end on how to support employees and their families in the field of early education. MnVEL, an organization of over 20 businesses, knows the value of providing quality early care and education opportunities for employees' families. Not every company can afford or is interested in providing on- or near-site childcare for their employees' families. MnVEL is working to help businesses, large and small, become aware that there are many low-cost options for employers to utilize to make parents aware of the importance of early childhood education for children. MELF is one of the programs that has come out of the MnVEL program. By providing good educational foundation options for children, businesses build employee loyalty and also realize they are building the workforce of the future. The cornfield is gone. The original employee who introduced childcare as an option is now a vice president. And across the street, instead of corn, we have various businesses. The children we cared for 20-some years ago are now back, bringing their children to some of the same care providers they had when they were at Golden Heart. Childcare and early education are not separate. They are early care and education. It is not someone else's problem. It is our future. Let's work together to make the strongest foundation for our children to build on, and as a result, build the strongest and best educated Minnesota workforce. I will answer any questions you have at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Willard. At Golden Heart, you take... It's not just kids, people that work at Taylor.
Primarily,
but
the literature that you have a brochure for a licensed capacity of 147. Infants and toddlers, we only care for the children of Taylor Corporation. And we do, for the preschool on up, do take non-employees as spaces available. In the summer, we offer an off-site summer school-age program, and that is open to the community. We do not have space available for any more of the community. We keep it full with our 3,000 employees in the Mankato area.
And do you have an after-school program?
We no longer have an after-school program. We did have a kindergarten after-school program, but kindergarten in Mankato just went to all day. And I feel strongly that transporting children for 2 hours of care when they could be cared for right at the school with an after-school program is best for them.
And they do have that at the school.
Yes, each of the schools has an after school program.
And what about the wait list for employees?
We have a wait list. We are not able to accommodate all of them, and that wait list varies. Right now we probably have about 5 families in the infant care that we will not be able to accommodate.
And what time of the day does the... child care center open, and what time does it close?
We open at 6:30 in the morning, and we close at 6 o'clock at night.
And that's why there's a late pickup.
penalty, huh? After 6 o'clock. So we really try to keep an eye on it. If they say they're coming at 5 and it's 5:30, we start making calls. Because we have not been known to. Mom thought Dad did, Dad thought Mom did, and nobody came for the child at 7 o'clock. Oh, gosh. Any other questions? Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are the hours of operation for the corporation? Is it a 3-shift? Do you have a night shift?
They have some night shifts. We have never had any parents request care for evening. What we have done is sometimes we have one parent that works days, one parent that works nights, and so then we accommodate the 2 hours of overlap. But we, for the most part, I think parents that work the night shift have other care, so this provides them the full use of their income and not having to pay for child care.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious, you said you had staff that stayed a long time, and that's very admirable because you're right, the turnover is so high. Can you give me a little bit of a description of the background, of the professional background of your staff? And do you have different levels of staff, some managers? Are they all at the same level? Do you, just a little brief description.
Sure.
Ms. Willard.
We have staff. We have each of the components has a coordinator, which is an overseer and does all the staffing schedules, etc., for that component, infant, toddler, and preschool. As I said, we have 13 of our staff that have 4-year early childhood education degrees, 4 have 2-year associate early childhood degrees, and 2 are RNs. The rest have some credits in the field, but not a full degree. So what we look at hiring is the highest qualified as possible. So if I have a staff person that's a teacher, I don't just say, well, then we only have an aide in there. We try it because they work as a team. They all work together. You walked into Golden Heart, you would never know who had the 4-year degree, who had a 2-year degree. We all work together.
And what about their salaries?
They're all hourly. And the majority of them are now full-time if they choose to be part-time. Some of them choose to be part-time. As I said, if they work 20 hours a week or more, they qualify for the benefit package of the corporation. And the 4-year degree starts at $10.50
an hour?
Right. That's very high in rural Minnesota.
And Ms. Willard, do most of them work 8-hour days if they choose?
The most of them that want, 35 to 40 hours is what the majority of our staff are scheduled. We say 35 is full time. So that allows us some flexibility if somebody's sick so that we can utilize the same caregivers for the children if rather than introducing new faces.
Okay. Ms. Peterson, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a follow-up on the pay. They get $10.85 an hour. Is that everyone? How does that, does it increase each year? Does it increase with the years of service? Do you have a differentiated pay schedule?
We have 3 pay schedules. So $10.50 is if they have a 4-year degree. $9.50 is if they have teacher qualified but less than a 4-year degree. And then $7.50 is an aide. We have very few aides in our program. And every 6 months, they are. We do have a staff evaluation based on performance. There is the option of pay increase for the first 3 years. After the first 3 years, then it's a yearly increase.
And Ms. Willard, is the in your area? You said that this is very good pay. In your area, then this is a living wage.
For child care workers, it's better than most, but many of the child care centers in our area are, you're talking 5.25 start, because we have no centers that are other than independent. In the Mankato area, they're all independent. So there's small independents in the lower end of 5.25, 5.75, and the higher end is $7 to $9. And that's where they start. And from what I've gathered from talking to various directors,
many times that's where it stays.
And so this is the really good job for child care workers in the area.
Working at Golden Heart because of the pay and the benefit package. Most centers don't have any insurance package at all.
Representative Wardle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not surprised that Mr. Taylor does this sort of thing because I used to teach school with his brother, a math teacher. They were both, in fact, I think Mr. Taylor wanted to be a math teacher himself, but a long time ago, he bought calculators and donated calculators to, I can't remember who anymore, but probably kids in Mankato area, but I'm not surprised he's doing this.
Education is very important to the Taylors, and Dean is carrying forth with that. She's very involved in the MELF program mm-hmm. at this point, and Blue Earth and Nicollet County are part of the pilot project for Parent Aware, and we are working towards that goal.
But my question, Madam Chair, my question was that now that they have all-day kindergarten in Mankato, I noticed that this says they go up to 5 and 6 year olds, so some of them are in kindergarten.
Some parents choose not to send their children to kindergarten just because they're 5.
Oh, I understand that. I sent my kids when they were 6, too. But I was just wondering, you probably have an influx of kids in the summertime then when school's out, and can you accommodate that extra number of children?
We rent off-site space, and we do another 50 to 75 children every year. It's different for school age, and that would be kindergarten through age 12.
I remember you saying that. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Please give Senator Taylor our greetings when you
see him. I will. I will.
We appreciate that you came all this way. Yes. Louisa Torres-Harris. Lisa Thompson?
Yes.
Thank you for coming to the committee, Louisa. Yoo-hoo! We understand that you've been going to child care since you were born. And we want to know what you've learned. Or what do you think about child care situation where you go? Well, Miss,
it's okay.
We talked about some things before we came. Well, let her get used to sitting up there, and then Ms. Thompson and Deb Zeismer. And then maybe we can see her too.
Yeah.
Great. Hey, Louisa.
There we are. You okay?
All right. Okay. Perhaps you should talk for a minute and then, or for a little bit, and then she'll get used to how we're doing here and maybe she'll add something.
Maybe you have something to add? All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for having me here. My name is Lisa Thompson, and I have been a in-home family child care provider for the past 15 years. I'm also currently serving as president of the Union for Family Child Care Providers, CCPC, Child Care Providers Together. In Ramsey County, I serve as a district coordinator for child care work. And my background is in elementary education. This here is Ms. Louisa Harris-Torres. Let's get it all in there. And she has been in my care since she was just a few months old. And she is now 4. And she is ready for kindergarten. Now today I wanted you to come here. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about what family child care is.
And for those of you that aren't quite sure, we transform our homes to provide a stimulating and loving, safe, caring environment for a small, mixed age group of children. And they get sleepy in the afternoon. We operate as a licensed and regulated facility, regulated by the county in accordance with state laws. We have one or two adults and up to 14 children, depending on the license. So just giving you an idea of what a day in the family child care home is like. We're caregivers, of course, but we're also educators, we're accountants, the bookkeepers, nurses, cooks, custodians, family social workers, children's advocates, I'm here, and we're peace negotiators, and many, many hours of being just an entertainer. And that's all in the course of a single day. All right? You can go right ahead. Now, I want you to know why some parents do family child care. It's a small, personal group setting that allows for securely bonded relationships. It allows for flexibility in schedules for families. It allows for mixed ages, which supports younger children learning from the older children, and the older children learning empathy and understanding of the younger children. Siblings stay together. It also offers the experience of an extended and large family. In this day, when often families are small and often isolated from members of their own extended family. Hold on, I need to read that. You write down here. We have the opportunity for individualized learning experiences. And for instance, when we have one child who is so loving writing letters, we could write letters all day long, like Louisa would really like to do. And we can adjust our program so specifically and individually appropriate to the level that the children are at. We can also offer the convenience to be in the community. As a matter of fact, we're right next door. And FCC, Family Child Care, looks like our community because we are members, you know, specifically looks like our households, members of the community. Family child care is conducive to strong supportive connections with families. And it's also a comfortable home environment. Now, operating a family child care is a career choice. It's not your teenager's babysitting on Friday night. It's a career choice to provide a quality environment for children to flourish. Now, learning is happening in family child care. The successful early education is in our homes. Our early education is not a watered-down kindergarten. Hear a lot of talk these days about what ready for kindergarten is. And it's really not about pushing the curriculum lower and lower down to younger ages, push them farther than we would have otherwise in past years been. But it's about the knowledge that we have today about the importance of the developing brain and what skills are important for children to succeed in kindergarten, which aren't always necessarily knowing the letters and the letter forms. It's about personal and social skills. One of the most important skills for being ready for kindergarten is being able to learn with other children, being able to interact with a teacher, and just sometimes being able to sit still. Early education is not specific pieces of information, but it's a stimulating, positive, meaningful experiences for children. Now, early learning is happening in family child care. It's a great success for young children. This is going to rewrite my papers here. Some of the things that we need to continue to provide good care for Minnesota children. Above all else, please do not cut any of the child care assistance programs
the gains we've made over the past 2 years in restoring some of the cuts back from before 2003. It's been really instrumental in keeping family child care providers in the field, keeping parents able to work because they have reliable care for their children. We can't roll back the tide of the successes that we've had over the past few years. There's been so much focus in our state on infrastructure and improving our infrastructure in our state. This is our infrastructure. This is what our state is built on. With that in mind, we really need leaders to understand that providers cannot afford to provide quality care when they're overburdened with costs. And on the same hand, we need to understand that parents can't afford to pay more. And that's why we really need support in, from the state in providing quality care. It's vital that the state continues to support the access and availability of quality education in a variety of settings, such as family child care. Another thing that providers have talked much about needing is that we need to reevaluate the use of the parent-aware rating tool as when it's used as a one-size-fits-all evaluation of programs. Family child care is different in many ways, but it's also very successful in educating children. We need to keep the cost of doing care down as much as possible to help ease the burden of paying for quality care on parents. One of the things besides I ask legislators please to do what they can to support the reduction of costs in our training, remove the barriers providers have when using substitutes and assistance, reform the collection of co-payments from parents, support a change back to the days when licensors were in the position to help providers stay in compliance with regulations rather than be a regulator and writing correction orders, allowing for tax equity by not taxing the federal food program dollars that we receive to feed the children nutritious meals, and also allowing us to claim the child care credit up to the same age as other working parents do in Minnesota. And lastly, to continue to support all parents' access to quality care and educational experiences by making requests to the current program. In conclusion, I would like, if you could, Louisa, can you tell the people what do you really love about coming to daycare? You can tell me. I'll tell them. What? She says doing projects. Is there anything else? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thompson. Tell me what you meant by the child care credit, that you could claim the child care credit like other people.
Yes, ma'am. As a family child care provider, I can claim as a credit that I, as a parent having a family child care business, I can claim that credit as if I had my child care financial. Parents can claim a credit of up to $2,500 per child against their taxes. We're not actually paying ourselves to take care of our children, but we do need to reserve a space in our numbers. So if I have my own child in my care, I can't take someone else's child, so that's a loss in income. But I am able to take that credit against my income. But right now in Minnesota, we're only able to take that up to 5 years old. And other working parents are able to take it all the way up, I believe it's 12.
Oh. That's an issue for Representative Chesky. Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You mentioned the quality rating system, and you seem to have some concerns about that for family care centers. Could you expand on that just a bit?
Yes. There has been some concern from family child care providers that I've heard that it's very difficult to meet the standards in the same way because we work independently. Some of the standards that we're rated on are tilted towards having more than one adult in caring for the children. There's a lot of paperwork that really is very cumbersome for a person that's doing all of the roles of caregiving. There's some other, I can give you one example that a provider told me about who's involved in getting the rating. She described that she needed to document a written plan of transitioning a child from a bottle to a sippy cup and then have that plan approved by a parent. And because she didn't have that documentation, she was rated down. And even though she's a really wonderfully and very qualified provider, she's looking at getting a rating of a C because of issues like that. It's not that she doesn't pay very close attention to how she transitions children. It's just not documented in the same way because we're only one person. We're making lunch. Whereas other in a center, when there's more than one adult, they would have the opportunity to have more than one adult taking care of the children while another does documentation.
Ms. Thompson, do you do child care in your home?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that what you said? And then is there another adult there?
No, ma'am. No.
Have you ever had a helper?
I do have a helper, substitute, that comes into my home occasionally, like now, to take care of the children, to allow me to do other things. But I also have her come in to help me catch up on paperwork and things like that.
Okay. And how often does that person come in? Would you?
As much as I can afford. And also there are regulations as to how often I can. I'm actually limited by state law that I can only have her come in 30 days in a year.
30 full days?
There's no distinction as to what a day is, and it's been interpreted by many licensors that 1 hour is a day.
So if you have somebody come in, well, it's based on an hourly rate then?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any other questions, Ms. Thompson? Any other questions of Louisa? Louisa, when I was a little girl, every morning I had hair as long as yours, and every morning I had to sit on a chair, and my mother would take the brush and wrap my hair around her finger, and the curls would come out just like yours. And my hair was dark brown. Very similar to yours, Louisa. So I think those are really special curls. Sometimes my brother would do it, but his curls weren't nearly as good. Anyway, Representative Flower.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here today. You know, it's important to us to see real people. I think a lot of times, and I can't see you, a lot of times members, we forget about family child care and people are in their homes, but how important that is and how many people are doing it. So we appreciate it. I would like to get your list in writing sometime, or if you can email it to me, just because I thought you had a lot of great suggestions in terms of things we can do, and we're often looking for those suggestions, and we'll follow up with you about QRS too to talk about that. And as far as Louisa, I just wondered, how about what's your favorite color? Can you tell us what your favorite color is?
We had this discussion earlier today. Starts with a P.
Oh.
Can you guess what Louisa's favorite color is? It starts with a P?
Well, I like green. I think she probably likes pink, maybe?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
ma'am. Ms. Seismer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Debbie Seismer, and I am the Director of Early Childhood Education at the YWCA of Minneapolis. The YWCA operates 4 early childhood education centers in the city of Minneapolis. We serve about 500 children and their families throughout a 1-year period. Two of our centers are located in South Minneapolis and serve a high portion of at-risk children. We have lower ratios and support staff at those centers that help children and families find the resources in the communities that will help them to become successful in school. Our downtown location serves about 70% low income and 30% full fee families. So there is a diversity not only racially and ethnically, but socioeconomically at that center as well. Our newest center is located at the Abbott Northwestern Hospital, and that's the center I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about today. We opened it. The center is called the Child Care Business Development Program, and that's a program within the YWCA Minneapolis at their Abbott Northwestern Hospital location. The program's goal is to nurture culturally specific child care businesses organized by new Americans or other underserved populations. The program extends the YWCA's mission of both empowering women and eliminating racism. It creates quality early childhood education opportunities for children of new American families and trains women to become entrepreneurs who will eventually operate their own culturally appropriate family child care. This program concept grew out of a needs assessment project conducted by a Phillips Neighborhood Consortium, including residents, employers, and employees, children's advocates, and community and economic development experts, with the help of students from the Humphrey Institute. In the late 1990s, the city of Minneapolis sought federal empowerment zone funding for programs in economic development. The large concentration of new American populations, combined with the need for quality early childhood education for low-income populations, led to the idea of creating a child care business incubator program. This program is named the Child Care Business Development Program. The hospital didn't want us calling it an incubator. Currently, this program operates 4 bungalow rooms, each with a primary non-English language and culture. Each room can have up to 10 children of mixed ages from infant to school age. This mix of ages combined with the layout of space, which is multi-room, similar to those found in a home, a living room, kitchen, bathroom, play area, make the setting similar to the family child care model. Each room has a bungalow provider who is native to a country other than the United States, and her language and culture is the dominant one in the room. Right now, we have 2 Somali and 2 Spanish-speaking classrooms. The bungalow provider spends anywhere from 3 to 5 years in the child care business development program. The time in the program depends on her experience and training prior to coming to the program and how quickly she is able to complete the extensive training and program milestones. Under the direction of the YWCA, training occurs in the following areas: working with children in groups, business aspects of child care, marketing child care services, record keeping, curriculum planning and execution, quality assessment, and health and safety standards. There is continual discussion around how to reconcile cultural differences in child care between a bungalow provider's native country and state licensing regulations in Minnesota. Interpreters are frequently brought in to maximize the effectiveness of communication in training situations. A bungalow provider graduates the program once she has completed all of her required training and has also purchased a home. Home ownership is a critical element to this program since a family child care cannot typically operate out of a rental unit. The plan is for the families and children that are currently attending in one of the bungalows to move with the provider when they move out into the community. And this will help her to have a consistent income and client base as she begins her own venture. The YWCA will remain a resource for the bungalow provider once she leaves the center. We expect to graduate or launch out our first provider within the next 18 months. Thank you.
Question? Representative Flowers.
Madam Chair, and as you know, we just toured the bungalows. My Sarah Benskoper-Rusink's up there, my CA, and I did, and we were very impressed with what we saw, although I have to say I was really taken aback at, you know there's a lot of regulations, but when it takes people 4 years, you know, between buying the house and getting the house up to speed for childcare, getting through all the regulations, and getting, you know, what the kids have to do, that's a long time. And you think if you have little kids, in 4 years, they're kind of getting to be grown up. And I know a lot of them, they didn't have their own kids in the program, right? So they have other kids other than their own, which is unusual for family child care. And something we heard numbers was that apparently a lot of people don't go through the license system because it is so hard. So you have an awful lot of parents out there dropping their kids off for cash, you know, somewhere in their neighborhood because it's just easier. And I think the more we can do as a legislature to make programs like this work and get that good, high-quality child care, it's really, really important. So thank you for what you're doing, and I think we want to support it. And we have to look at that, those barriers, and why are so many people going the other route and how we can get them back sort of over to our side. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Slava.
Ms. Beesmer, when you said that the Y would stay as a resource for the bungalow, is that the Y in general, or is that a particular person? Is that a person that the people that are moving into the bungalow are trained with, and so they get to keep a continuity of their trainer, or is it just anybody, they have to call a 1-800 number or whatever, and there you are?
No, they would be connected directly to the Early Childhood Center at the Abbott Hospital. And Jim Nicolai is the program manager over there, so he would be the primary contact that they would have access to. They also have access to the staff training that the YWCA offers the rest of its child care staff at the other sites, so they could continue going to those trainings.
Wonderful. And you were doing this for empowering women and eliminating racism.
Yes, the mission of the YWCA is to empower women and to eliminate racism.
Any other questions? Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to skip to Janelle Taylor. Ms. Taylor, will you come? You're a parent, but we'd like to hear from you about your experiences. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Taylor.
Thank you. I would like to thank Madam Chairman and the committee for allowing me this opportunity to speak to you about how important child care is. My name is Janelle J. Taylor. I work at Domino's Pizza in Woodbury. I'm an assistant manager there. I make $11 an hour, and before I had child care, I was paying close to $600, so basically I was working to pay for my child care. And I was paying a friend to watch my son. And even though she was my friend, he still wasn't happy because he was so young. He was crying all the time. It was making him sick. So I would always be calling him to see if he's okay and wondering how he was doing. Then my son's grandmother brought to my attention about the full-day Head Start program. So I looked into that, and then the center director helped me get my child care papers in order so he could attend the Head Start Full Day Center. And where he is at, he is he receives the love and attention he deserves. Getting help for my child care directly benefits my son. His name is Isaiah Evans, and he has blossomed into quite a young man since he's been in a licensed Head Start full day center. Well, if I didn't have child care, I wouldn't be able to have him attend the full day center. He's learning age appropriate things he needs to know before he enters kindergarten. It's very important to me that Isaiah is around children's own age and that he is learning the skills he needs before entering kindergarten. By having child care assistance, it benefits my whole family. We are able to have a family night, which keeps us very connected as a family unit. Plus, I make 3 times more than if I were on MSIP. The biggest thing it is that benefits is Isaiah, and in it itself makes it all worth it. And thank you.
Ms. Taylor, how old is Isaiah now?
He's 4 and a half.
And how long was he in with your girlfriend?
Since he was a baby.
To just when he became 4?
No, he was 2 and a half, 3.
Oh. And was your girlfriend that took care of him, did she have other children there, or?
She had teenage children. She didn't have children his own age where he could flourish.
Mm-hmm. And where he was given attention and learning opportunities.
That wasn't what he was being given, and that's why I wanted him into the Head Start program, because there would be times that I just popped in unannounced, and I just saw my son smiling, and my son is spelling his name now, and it just, sometimes I cry just going in there to see how much my son is maturing and becoming a better little person,
mm-hmm.
and they teach him that there.
Questions? Representative Slaway.
Madam Chair, naturally I have multiple questions. I think it's really interesting, you know, that the topic today is child care and workforce is really, I suppose you had child care so you could work. I mean, you work at Domino's and you could do that, but really by having high quality child care, it's making, keeps you working, right, and also makes his life better. And which one does he go to? Does he go to Battle Creek or?
No, he goes to the Bigelow Head Start, Full Day Head Start. And yes, I wanted better quality child care for him, and that's why I chose that center. And basically, I could afford the child care. I was paying so much. I was paying over $600 because it was for the whole week, so Monday to Saturday, Sunday. And now I'm only paying versus $600, I'm paying like $260. And plus the $52 for my part of the child care at the Bigelow Center. But that little $300, I know it's a it's not worth it to me. It's just a little price to pay for how much they've improved on my son. My son came from a broken home. His father left him when he was 2 and a half, and he was quite the broken child. And the ladies that work at the Bigelow Center, they're a godsend. They love what they do. They are in their place where they need to be in the world, and it helps that you feel the love. And when my son is sick, his teacher, she rubs his back and gives him hugs and lets him know it's okay to speak up, and you know, and it's just, it's important to me. My little man.
I'm sure. I get it. I'm a mom, and it's hard dropping your kids off and going to work, but it's a lot easier if you know they're being cared by someone that's going to love them. So
he used to cry when I dropped him off to my friend, and it's not that she wasn't giving him the right attention he needed, but when you put him in a child care and he's in his own element with a child, his children's own age, it makes it a little bit easier. He used to cry when I dropped him off, but then he got comfortable with the children, and they're all his friends, and that's all he talks about. My friend's this, my friend's that, and And when he comes home and he tries to write his name, it makes me want to interact with him more. Because, you know, I go out into the stores and buy him his little books so he can practice write his name and letters and shapes. And the school helps me become a better parent, too, because they, you know, they're with him all day and they give me pointers how to teach him and lead him in the right direction. And it helps when you have a center that is connected with the parents. I am the parent president of the parent group there, so I have a lot to do with that. I also am a delegate for the policy council. So I am overseeing a lot of what happens to my son, and it's very important that I make decisions that benefit him and help, even though when my son, because my son is going to be 5 in August, that they'll allow me to stay and help as much as I can, because they've helped me so much grow as a mother and my son grow as a little man.
That's very good. I was a teacher for a long time, and when Head Start started even, and I taught in high school. And in the fall, when the kids would come in new, and I taught sophomores, and by the end of the second week, I could, with but one or two mistakes, point out which kids had gone to Head Start and which ones hadn't, because of their behavior, because of their time on task, because of just, there was just something a little additional about those kids that some of the other kids didn't have. And I was almost always right. And I did that as an exercise just to prove how smart I was. But it was a program that in that community that I taught in was very, very important, and important not only to the kids, but, as you said, to the parents.
I also believe it's very important to the children, because my child was delayed because of the home situation, and they provided physical therapy, speech therapy, and they were so comfortable with him that he would talk about it. And you don't have many children that will talk about situations like that, because they're kind of nervous about their shortcomings. Right. And they shouldn't be, because they're just babies. They're just learning. They're just baby stuff. And I, you know, if I didn't have child care assistance, I don't know where I'd be right now. I don't know where my son would be. You know, I just...
Right.
It's like when you plant a seed for a rose and it blossoms, it's so beautiful, you can't describe it. And I couldn't have done it without the child care, the Head Start program, or the child care assistance, and I give them all their praise that they deserve, because it's very important to a single parent.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Thank you for sharing your experience with us and providing us with your insights. We will use your testimony as we talk about the subject, as we develop our ideas. Thank you, too, for stepping up and becoming a leader. And you know, you've taken over the responsibility of leading the parents' group, and probably will be doing other things as your child grows. And that's important, too. And that's important to the other parents.
Well, I have teenage girls. And I want to be a positive role model for them.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other parents, I want them to know that, you know what, you can do it. You can. You don't need to have a whole bunch of people behind you, but if you have it, the right people behind you, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the facility I take my son to, I got a lot of backing. Ms. Joanne, she helps me. The board members that I'm on the board, they help me. And it's just, I don't know, it's making me a better person. And I think that once my son does graduate from this full-day Head Start program, that I do want to become, I want to try to get a job there, because I feel like I'm in my element with making it better for children.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me have this opportunity.
Yeah. Terry Thomas.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Terry Thomas, and I'm with the Dodd-Val Coalition, which is a
statewide coalition that does research and advocacy around employment and economic issues that affect low-wage, unemployed, underemployed, and dislocated workers. I'm also serve on the board of Childcare Works. I'm the co-chair of the board, so I have my dual role here today. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'd like to provide the committee with some relevant labor market information to help you understand the very critical support that Minnesota's Childcare Assistance Program provides to the lowest income working families. We published an important piece of labor and market information for working Minnesotans called the Cost of Living in Minnesota. The research is found in a hard copy report. I've distributed that to the committee. And it's also in an online interactive calculator on our website. It consists of basic family budgets for 18 different family configurations in all 87 counties in Minnesota. Each budget is accompanied by a family supporting wage, the amount that each worker in a family in that family needs to earn to meet their most basic needs without any help from charity or friends or family or the government. The hard copy of the report just has regional budgets. A full hard copy report would be about four times the size of that report, so we just keep it online and people can use it there. Our basic family budgets are based on average cost of very basic necessities. It's a no-frills budget. There's no money in there for savings, for retirement, your child's education, for debt repayment, entertainment, eating out. Really, we call it a really basic support budget. We've always maintained that first and foremost, people should be able to find solutions to their economic problems in the labor market. And that's why we evaluate job opportunities using our family budgets and family supporting wage as a standard. But we also recognize that there has been and continues to be a gap between what workers need to meet their basic needs and what jobs pay. We've always supported Minnesota's Child Care Assistance Program as one of the most important ways to help families manage that gap. Our research shows, for example, that a metro family with two workers and two children, in that family, each worker would have to find a job that paid at least $13.19 per hour in order to meet their family's basic needs. And to get a sense of the job opportunities in the metro area, you'll note that 35% of jobs in the metro area pay less than $13.19. That actual budget and piece of information is on the right-hand most column of page 9 in the report. To get a picture of the greater Minnesota average, and we don't usually like to talk about the greater Minnesota average since each region is different and most people like to just look at their region in the report. But for that same family in greater Minnesota, each worker would have to find a job that paid at least $10.50 an hour. And about 36% of jobs in greater Minnesota pay less than that. Between the last two publications of this report, overall costs in the basic family budget rose on average 5%, a total of 5%, in both Greater Minnesota and in the Twin Cities. And on average, childcare costs stayed at about 17% of the basic family budget. And as Ann McCulley was testifying early on, that's really a range depending on your family, depending on the kind of childcare you use. Some families see that the cost of childcare is up to 30% of their budget. But on average, our research shows it's about 17% in the basic family budget. But between those two publications of the reports in the metro area, the cost of child care increased by about 17% in the basic family budget. And in greater Minnesota, it increased 7%. So that was one of the higher sort of cost of living increases in the basic family budget the last time we updated the report. So unfortunately, if someone were to look at the labor market to find a better paying job to meet their family's increased costs, they wouldn't find as many opportunities as you think. The state's most recent job vacancy survey reported that there are 133 jobs, seekers competing for 60,000 jobs. This would mean that a currently employed individual in a low-wage job would join those 133,000 job seekers for that limited pool of jobs. So most people in low-wage jobs are probably pretty glad they have a job. They'd like to get a better job, but they'd be joining a lot of unemployed people looking for a better job. Moreover, job vacancies aren't all in high-paying or even better-paying occupations. Of the 10 occupations with the most job openings, the only two paid a median wage of more than $10.25 per hour. So talking about job vacancies, not all jobs. It's also worth noting that in greater Minnesota, 45% of the job vacancies were part-time jobs, and those part-time jobs had a median wage that averaged about $7 an hour. This same sense of the availability of jobs is confirmed by the recent salary survey published by the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The three occupations that have the greatest number of jobs in Minnesota, so not job openings, but the occupations with the greatest number of overall jobs, are actually retail sales, office clerks, and cashiers. They have a combined median wage of about $10.25 an hour. And we use median wage because that gives us a sense that half the jobs pay below that and half pay above that. There are about 215,000 Minnesotans working in those occupations. These are all very important jobs that have value to both employers and employees, as well as to the state and local economy. Most of them are service jobs that are unlikely to move to other states or overseas, and these are jobs in the industries in which most child care assistance participants work. While we hear about the great promise of high-skill, high-wage jobs of the future, working families have to rely on the jobs that are available now in the labor market. Many of them don't pay enough to support a family, and the child care assistance programs are one source of support that some working families have been able to access. But its effectiveness has been diluted by program changes and funding reductions over the last 5 years that haven't been fully recovered. The need for quality, affordable child care by working families has not diminished. When opportunities to find better paying jobs are few, the support of the child care assistance program provides to working families only increases in importance. And lastly, it's worth noting that when there are fewer better paying job opportunities, both parents must work in order to make ends meet, even though there are costs of working, child care being one cost and transportation being another. So while some people assume that if one parent stays home, the savings in child care costs will make up for the lost earned income, for low-wage workers, it's just simply not a viable option, whether you're a single parent or even a family. For parents facing a labor market that has low wage and part-time jobs and is characterized by stagnant wage growth, both parents must work. Two parents have a better chance of finding a job that together will pay enough to meet a family's basic needs, including child care costs, than only one of those parents will have trying to find a higher paying job to support the family. So I just would like to reiterate the importance of the child care assistance program, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or get maybe any additional information. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Where there's jobs available, retail sales, cashier, and what?
The three occupations that have the most number of jobs in Minnesota are retail sales, office clerks, the general office clerks, and cashiers.
Representative Wardle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you giving us this because I can see it and don't have to remember it. But I'm just curious. You've got 215,120 Minnesotans work in those three occupations. I'm just curious. Does that 215,000 include or exclude, say, kids in high school or college that don't support a family?
Madam Chair, Representative Wardlaw, that would include, those are jobs, so that's all jobs regardless of who's working in them.
Okay, so Madam Chair?
Representative Wardlaw.
So, since half of these are below the median 1025 and half are above, do we know where those lie? Are they in the bottom half or are they spread on up and down or... those kids that are, you know, the young kids.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Thomas,
Representative Wardlaw, that's a great question. Knowing who is working in the job, the jobs at different wage levels, I wish we could know that from the data that we have. This is just this is from the Minnesota Salary Survey. This is from the Salary Survey, and that's just information that's reported from employers, and the survey does not ask the age of the worker.
One more, please.
Representative.
I think that's important for me to know because when you have family supporters that are in that bottom half, that'd be nice to know how many are down there. And it's just, I think it's important to know that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Slavik.
Madam Chair, ironically, I'm having a child care issue, so I'm going to have to leave my 6 days. So I have one at one program and one at home. And But I always think it's interesting when you go one adult, two children, the basic monthly needs in the metro is $44,000. You know, and as legislators, what do we make? We make much less than that. That we always knew things about paying jobs, but I mean, this kind of proves it, is you really can't support a family on what we make here. And I think, wow, if all of us are struggling, or if you don't have that second income, you know, you think about the families out there and how they're doing it and paying their child care. And I think these costs, frankly, on food are very conservative. Is this monthly basis?
Madam Chair, Representative Thomas, these are monthly budgets, they are intentionally conservative.
Yeah.
The food budget is based on the USDA's low-cost food plan. It's not the lowest cost food plan from the USDA, only because that's been found to be nutritionally different, so we don't use that budget item. We use the low-cost food plan. And you'll also note that the other clothing slash other category is very low. And we just, the numbers are always really surprising, and we all always look to see ourselves in them. So.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow up on Representative Wardlow a little bit regarding all the analysis in your wonderful publications by the study. Percentage of jobs less than X, less than Y. Do you have any access to be able to break that down again to the question of, you know, how many of those people are under 18? So how many of these jobs with those wages are under 18, just over 18, or by head of household or not by head of household, so we can break out the part-time and or teenage workforce issue versus people who are head of household?
Madam Chair, Representative Bunn, I will take those questions back to our brand new research analyst. And I will also tell you that we are very interested in being able to answer those kind of questions, but it's not readily available simply from the labor market information that's available from these, so it takes an additional analysis that basically has to be paid for. We either have to pay these or we have to pay somebody to do it ourselves. But I'd be happy to, and I'd also just add one more thing. We do present this information in a relatively basic format to answer a couple of very basic questions, and then we're more than happy to take additional questions and see what we can find out more. So I'll see what I can find out quickly.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Representative Wardlow.
Thanks, Ms. Just one comment. I do recognize the fact that sometimes these 18 or less year old kids are working to supplement the family income, and they may or may not get to keep it all themselves. They just throw it into the family fund. I'm sure that happens.
And they buy their clothes, too.
And they don't eat at Doolittle to have that great chicken, either.
I bet not. Because they're working at McDonald's. Any other questions? Thank you so much, Ms. Thomas.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the participants today and the organizers. And we have a lot to think about. In our packet are the minutes from February 25th meeting. Representative Ward.
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes of that meeting.
Representative Ward moves the minutes be adopted as printed. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are adopted. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.